Today is November 16th, 2007, and we have a great show for you today. We have Eustace Mullins with us, one of the great American patriots, founding fathers of the exposing of the Fed Reserve, author of many books, an extensive education in multiple universities. We'll let you get into that here in a second. I'd like to welcome you on the show today here, Eustace. How are you doing?
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Virginia. I'm out right in the heart of the Skyline Drive part of the Virginia. It's a very nice place to be.
Okay. Just wanted to bring up some topics. We were talking earlier about Ron Paul's campaign and his idea of the Fed Reserve.
Yes.
Go ahead and elaborate.
I think Mr. Pound would be quite pleased with his discussion of the Federal Reserve because he doesn't touch on it.
Yeah, notice that he is against the Fed Reserve, but he doesn't really get on the topic of why the Fed Reserve.
No, he never gets into the subject. I sometimes wonder if he has read my history of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, he would do he would benefit himself quite a bit to read your book, The Secrets of the Fed Reserve, that you did write back in 1952, and is an excellent book, and one of the founding books that exposed the Fed Reserve, and a lot of people have used a lot of your research to benefit them in exposing it.
Well, I got the facts, and I got them all from government documents, and nobody's ever challenged anything in the book, because Ezra Pound told me to document everything I wrote, and I did, and nothing's ever been challenged.
And once you get into it, just maybe a brief history of how you discovered the Fed Reserve, how you met Ezra Pound, and how you went about exposing the Fed Reserve.
Well, it's all it was all predestined, apparently, because I had no intention of meeting Ezra Pound. He was in Europe, and I was in the United States. So the U.S. government flew him to Washington, put him in an insane asylum where I could have all the time with him I wanted to.
And so he basically mentored you. You're one of the last living protégés of Ezra Pound.
I am the last surviving protégé, and that includes Ernest Hemingway, T.S. Eliot, James Joyce, and many other very famous writers were given a Nobel Prize for their work.
So I'm thinking here, I'm listening to, if anybody's ever listened to Myron Fagan's speech, it's a speech that he gave quite a while ago, and in his speech he was talking about revolutionary movements that were controlled by the same criminals that are running governments and that are orchestrating false flag terror attacks, and I see, let's say in the 9/11 truth movement where you have a lot of focus revolting against the government sometimes, it looks like.
You don't know whether it's revolting against the government or whether the government's handling the whole operation.
Exactly.
I mean,
you see
that
too.
That's a lot of suspicion among the American people because no criminal has ever been arrested for 9/11. You know, we had a congressional commission on 9/11, and this congressional commission, like most congressional commissions, didn't come up with anything. But they were very, very satisfied with the results.
And if you look at some of the people that were involved in the commission, they all tie back to the same criminal network here. And they didn't get anywhere, obviously, because they didn't want to, because they'd be implicating themselves in that. Can you go through some of the books that you have written in the past and kind of talk about some of the research that you have done? Like, for instance, not only have you done the book of The Secrets of the Fed Reserve, but I also find one of your books that you've done, Murder by Injection.
Yes, that's the only history of the American Medical Association. The interesting thing is that my books were all written because as a young student, I went to the Library of Congress for books on those subjects, and I found that the Library of Congress that I didn't have a single book that I wanted to read, and I had to write these books myself.
Basically, what you're telling us is you actually went out there and did the research yourself, so that would be recommended to, say, someone that's new to these ideas, is to get out there and do their own research.
Well, it's absolutely true, and my experience was if I wanted to read a book, first I had to write it, because the book wasn't there. And that's, you have lots of publishing houses, lots of people in the book business, but they had nothing that I wanted, so I had to do it myself.
I mean, you're talking about some of these publishing houses. You've had some trouble in the tax in the past with trying to get some of these books out to people,
I've always had trouble. There's no popular. What they always tell you is there's no popular demand, and the popular demand is what the sales department of the publishing house says what the people want, and the people never want the books that they claim they want.
What do you foresee in the United States right now as far as the population goes.
Well, I see a tremendous correction taking place. I think it's a natural movement that is turning around toward the principal goals of the early American Republic. People are beginning to find their way. I think it's a very good thing.
So you actually see the United States getting into a better situation and the stuff getting
exposed.
Well,
I think it's moving in a better situation as an inevitable effect of the tide of history. I think that's what's going on. In other words, things are improving because they can't get any worse. The dollar has been depreciated from 100 cents in 1913 to 2 cents a day. That shows you something's going on.
Now, you were mentioning earlier that you had some new documents or some new evidence about the Fed Reserve. Could you go ahead and elaborate on that for us?
Oh, well, in my original research of the Federal Reserve, I found the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 had an amazing paragraph which said that the Treasury Department of the United States will no longer be the sole fiscal agent of the United States, and the new fiscal agent of the United States will be the Federal Reserve Bank. In other words, this privately owned bank which the conspirators had put together. So I thought that was a very remarkable development. And do you know that paragraph has never been mentioned in any economic course in the United States?
Yeah, I doubt it would be.
1913. Second development. First, the Department of Treasury was first to go, and the War Department was the second to go. The War Department disappeared. Instead of a War Department, we had a Defense Department, because these bankers said they would never again attack anybody, so we don't need a War Department. We just need a Defense Department if we are attacked, like apparently 9/11 was an attack against the United States, so of course we had to defend ourselves. So we're still defending ourselves.
Now, there's a new development coming up where there's this federal case going on with AIPAC, and they're indicting a whole bunch of these criminals. A lot of them had dealings in 9/11. I've been trying to stress to people lately that this AIPAC trial is something that we really need to pay attention to and encourage the federal prosecutors to get justice, because I think this will open up a big can of worms if this gets into court and actually some stuff develops. Have you kept up on this topic at all, or?
Well, they're not opening a can of worms. The same worms have been there since 1913.
Exactly.
So all we need to do is look at the worms that we've got. We don't need to open a can of worms.
So do you think this case could possibly go anywhere to start getting any kind of justice with these people that at least were involved in 9/11 and they have had long ties with this conspiracy with the Federal Reserve, too?
Well, the main stumbling block is that in 1913, they lobbied through Congress for the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. So what you're dealing with is an existing act of Congress, and that's the first thing you have to get to work on.
Now, as far as solutions go, I've heard people be very critical about Ron Paul wanting to go back to the gold standard, because the people that own the gold are the same people that own the Fed Reserve, and we should be going back to just printing our own currency that's controlled by the Congress. Is this correct?
Oh, yes, that's certainly true. Well, you have the hard money people have always been present since Alexander Hamilton in 1790, and they're the hard money people who say that money should be represented by gold backing. But that is not true, and it's not practical under the present economy. So what we have is a paper script economy of the Federal Reserve notes, and gold has very little to do with it. So there again, you have to deal with that situation before you can get going.
That's what my thoughts were. Because it wouldn't be a huge transition, as people might think, to switch over from the Congress taking back the power to print the money. And we wouldn't, like you say, wouldn't necessarily have to go back to a gold standard, because, like you say, these same criminals own the gold that own these central banks.
Well, we don't have to go back to anything. What we have to do is to work out a monetary system which is practical for our present economy. And that's something that Congress doesn't want to deal with. This came up repeatedly after the crash of 29, and it was debated throughout the 1930s, but nobody ever pointed out that the Federal Reserve System enacted in 1913 was the main problem of the crash.
One of the things I was looking at is, everybody's heard, you've heard of the Amero being printed, wanting to be the replacement currency for dollar, the peso, and the Canadian currency up there. Do you foresee that being a completely new central bank system set up for North America, or do you think they're still going to try to use, say, the Fed Reserve?
The problem is that the central bank system is behind everything, and what people don't know is that the main function of a central bank is war finance. So in other words, the central banks exist to finance wars, and they were set up to finance wars. And so we've had to all of these wars in the 20th century simply because of the central banking system. Nobody seems to have ever perceived the obvious correlation between the central banks and the wars that we have.
Yep, exactly. Now, some of the people behind these central banking systems and have been behind numerous other crimes, and especially since the last 100 years, have been primarily out of the House of Rothschild. Is this not correct?
Well, the Rothschilds were the instigators of the entire central banking system. So their name comes up when you examine the central banking system. So that's what you have to deal with.
So what do you think, other than as far as the politicians and the media go in this country, what do you think are some of the solutions that the American people can get out there and do to create a change in effect?
Well, Ezra Pound referred to the politicians as a scum which naturally rises to the top. And you have to look at that situation before you decide what to do with the politicians.
All right.
See, the term of public service was endemic in the foundation of America.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were mostly public servants outside that. People like Thomas Jefferson and George Washington were public servants. They were practically never paid, and they never looked for payment because they wanted to create the United States that we have now.
Exactly. And this was some of the things that that you can research too in Myron Fagan's speech about the history and breakup, and not only the works you've done too. So,
well, Myron Fagan was a complete surprise to me after my Federal Reserve book was published. After a couple of years, I began to be told about a man named Myron Fagan in Hollywood that was publicizing my book, and I never encountered him. I never knew anything he had written, but it turned out that this man was perfectly sincere, and it came about because of his natural reaction as a Hollywood highly paid Hollywood screenwriter making $5,000 a week. He was disgusted by the fact that his fellow screenwriters were all communists, and they affected the proletariat aspect. They wore blue jeans, and they pretended to be workers, when in fact they were intellectual writers. So this offended him because he thought people should be what they are. And that started him off to making fun of the Hollywood screenwriters. And, of course, he encountered tremendous resistance, which only strengthened his resolve, and he was launched as a writer on that subject.
Now, when you look at back in history, like the Fed Reserve and the IRS, I also noticed that something else of that same era was created, actually the same year that the Fed Reserve was instituted, that bill was passed, and it's the ADL.
The ADL was a propaganda effort for the Federal Reserve System. And in fact, when my book was first published in 1953, the first group to openly attack it was the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. And they have issued attacks on my book ever since 1952 that the book is verily anti-Semitic. And of course, there's never been anything verily anti-Semitic in my writing or our lectures. And I could never understand why they did that.
It's
continued since 1952, a steady barrage from the ADL against my Federal Reserve book.
It might have something to do with the fact that you're exposing a lot of the criminal network when you're doing that.
Well, apparently the ADL felt that I was exposing a primary Jewish operation.
Mm-hmm.
Although I never termed it as such. But it was inevitable that a concerned reader would see by these attacks. They moved from calling my book verily anti-Semitic to rapidly anti-Semitic. That whenever I mentioned Jewish people, I would foam at the mouth, which I've never done.
No, that's not been the case. People have researched histories, especially with the Rothschild-created Zionist movement out there.
Yes.
Nobody
ever foamed at the mouth when they discussed the Rothschild bankers.
Exactly.
But they pretend that takes place.
Now, well, you wrote a book called The Curse of Canaan.
The Curse of Canaan is a study of demonology and history. In my study of world history, I found that the demons appeared periodically throughout historical accounts. And I was surprised by that because I was not interested in demons in any particular way. But the more I looked into the subject, the more I found material on that subject.
And it kind of gets back into before even biblical times and kind of...
Biblical times and, you might say prehistoric times. But the fact is that the whole narrative held together. So when I finished my book, The Curse of Canaan, I found that the book held together very well and also worked with... biblical narratives and world history. So it's more or less vindicated by the existing situation. No one has ever attacked anything in the Curse of Canaan about the biblical origins of the work that I had written.
Could you give us a brief overview? It's another really great book that you've written, and it was called The World Order.
The World Order was an attempt to synthesize world politics from a single point of view, and it has worked very well because I found that the same people who organized the Federal Reserve System and the central banking were the people who were running the world as an orderly operation, which I call the World Order.
Now, if people are interested in getting some of your books, I got an address here for them people, because we noticed that you used to have a website for these books for people to purchase. I believe these are excellent, excellent books for everybody to have in their library and to go through and read. I highly recommend getting some of your books. Now, the address they can send money to purchase your books still is directly, and this is correct, the Christian Retirement Home?
Yes, Christian Retirement Home. The book orders can be filled directly from here.
And that is at 94 Mountain Vista Drive?
94 Mountain Vista Drive. And it's Stewartstraff, Virginia.
Stewartstraff, Virginia.
Which is a suburb of Waynesboro, Virginia.
Okay. And that is number 101 at 94 Mountain Vista Drive.
Yes. And the zip code is... 24477.
And so they can also send you money to purchase your books. And do you have something that you could provide them with for other information on other books that you've written?
Oh yes, I can send my current book list.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up, or any topics that you want to talk about?
No, I wanted to make the point that the War Department and the Department of the Treasury had been usurped by the Federal Reserve System itself. They became part of the Federal Reserve System. I think that is a very important thing for Americans to know, that they don't have a War Department anymore, but what they do have is the War Party of the Federal Reserve System. Because the Federal Reserve System, when it was passed in 1913, they promised to take it, to turn over all their profits to the Treasury of the United States. Instead, they abolished the Treasury and put their own Federal Reserve Bank in as the repository of all payments. So the bankers have used that income from the Federal Reserve System, instead of giving it to the Treasury, as they promised to do, they've used it to finance two world wars and many other wars. And they're continuing. They find it's a successful operation, and they are continuing along the same path. And this is a very bad news for the rest of the world. Smaller nations, of course, have no defense against this kind of a world order operation, because there's no way that they can unite against it. We have the United Nations, and that is part of the world order. So what can smaller nations do in a situation like that?
Exactly.
For instance, Afghanistan. Afghanistan is being ravaged. You see, the initial resolution was that looking into 9/11, they decided that Afghan had done it. Well, Afghan had actually defeated Russia in the Middle East, and Russia collapsed. So I guess they thought the same thing would happen with the United States. But the United States and Afghan have more or less survived with greatly diminished situation. But where is Afghan going? They're back in the heroin business, and things are moving along as usual.
Yeah, they're definitely making their crops went up quite a bit. They were supposed to go down, but their crop of heroin, or opium, I should say, out there has just gone through the roof ever since.
Well, it's a terrific location for the heroin trade because it can supply the rest of the world. And that's what apparently they're doing.
Books
well,
that
Ezra Pound worked all his life to uncover this situation, and it got him in the insane asylum. He did 15 years of that trial with no evidence against him whatsoever. And I finally met a congressman who decided to do something about it. And he stood on the floor of Congress and he asked the question, why is the government holding this man? And the government had no answer. So they released him right away. And that was the end of 15 years of imprisonment.
Yeah, because they were afraid to actually bring charges up against him because the man was intelligent and they wouldn't be able to beat him in court, so they decided to declare him mentally insane.
Well, there's been no legal attention paid to the matter whatsoever, either by the Pound family. Of course, Ezra Pound died in 1972, and his family does not seem interested in pursuing the matter. But I would think that his wife finally died after this horrendous 15 years of living in Washington and being with her husband at the insane asylum every day. That was quite an ordeal, and of course she had no life of her own because of that. And he has a son and daughter who also have not exhibited any attention to the situation.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that his legacy isn't living on, because he had some great work going on out there.
Oh, yes.
Well, I appreciate you being on today, Eustace.
And well, I've enjoyed your show.
Thank you, and we'd love to have you on again and talk about some more topics and some current events.
Oh, I just barely touched on things today. I've got a lot of information about it.
Hey.
Because this is such a fascinating thing that the work goes on all the time. And more details come to light all the time, too. It's amazing.
So you'd be willing to get on here again and we can touch on some more of these topics then? Would that be all right with you?
Yes, I could bring you up to date on some of the things. And I can do that.
Sounds good. Well, we appreciate you having on, and take care, and we will be talking with you very soon again. Thank you again, Eustace, for being on with us.
Bye.